Warm welcome to Jimmy T from New Jersey.
I'm Jimmy, I'm a recovering addict. Really don't like that light, but I want to thank God for everything. For the good, the bad, the indifferent, the expected, the unexpected. Just everything that's happened from the day He saw fit to create me to the day that I stand here before you. I want to thank the Chesapeake, Potomac region for gracing me with an opportunity to come here to share this morning, to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I just want to ask you to take a moment. I just want you to take a moment. I want you to invite the power, the force, the Spirit, God, if that would it be for you. Whatever it is that keeps you clean, a moment, an hour, a week, a day, whatever it is that keeps you keep coming back to Narcotics Anonymous and not using no matter what, I want you to invite that power in so that when it's all said and done, that power can receive the grace and the mercy and the glory for that which only that power can grace upon us. So if we could take that moment now, please. Thank you. I want to congratulate the Chesapeake, Potomac area, and can we give them a round of applause for a job well done? I want to thank the programming committee for believing enough in an addict who had a hard time to get clean for years and years and years in Narcotics Anonymous and giving him an opportunity to come down here and share. And you know, I was sitting over there with a man that I sponsor, and I when I stood up and I seen all the people, I was like, don't they know that there's a nor'easter out there? Like, shouldn't they have been going home already? And, you know, because no matter how many times God has graced and blessed me to do these things, it just never seems to change the anxiety and the fear and the uncomfortability and the lack of worthiness and the lack of acceptance and the lack of the ability to think that I have anything to offer to anybody else always creeps in and overburdens me with fear and uncomfortability. So contrary to what you may have ever heard on a tape or ever seen me behind a podium, I am not always at my best in this position. And I just want to share real quick that the adversary has been at work this weekend. Our literature talks about over and over and over again that there's a violent, destructive power at work in our lives. And I was invited here this morning to be the closing speaker, and I was invited based on, I believe, a God conscience, and I was invited because there was something that was said on a tape that somebody heard that somebody else thought would help somebody else. But the disease will take whatever avenue it can to get you to do what it wants you to do in spite of the fact that God's grace got you to the podium for you to do His work. And I got a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor who has a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor who has a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor who has a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor. I go to Narcotics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous only. I have one set of steps, one set of traditions, one set of concepts. I have one Narcotics Anonymous sponsor. I have one woman in my life. Because the disease will always take its opportunity to get you off your spot and get you to do things that it wants you to do in the name of defending what it is you believe in. I do not make any apologies for the fact that I am a Narcotics Anonymous member who believes in Narcotics Anonymous. And I have been under attack from some people this weekend who have a consistent effort to tell me that I don't have the right to have conviction about my belief in Narcotics Anonymous. That I need to be grateful to other things. But I need to talk about that God created Narcotics Anonymous so that an addict like me would have some place to go where I could identify and be able to heal with empathy. Let's talk about I don't suffer with drug addiction. I got a newsflash. I don't have a drug problem. A lot of silence. Y'all thought you were in a drug program. This is not a drug program. This is a recovery program from the disease of addiction, of which drugs are just a major symptom. If I had a drug problem, then why, when the obsession was lifted to use drugs, did I still need to come to meetings and work steps? Why did I still need to be sponsored? Why did I still need to go over step work? Why did I still have to pray on a regular basis? If all I had when I got here was a drug problem, then when the drugs were gone, I should have been straight. We're going to go to the literature now. In Who's an Addict, it says, most of us believe that long before we ever used, the disease of addiction was apparent in our lives. So if before I ever used, the disease of addiction was apparent, and I used for 18 years, and then I put the drugs down, wouldn't the disease still be apparent in my life? Wouldn't I still suffer with low self-esteem, self-hatred, self-doubt, inability to like or love myself on any level? I only use drugs to be able to cope with the ability to not be able to cope with myself. So now, here I am at 27 years old to get clean, right? And I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. Now I'm an emotional wreck. And you're telling me as long as I don't use, that I'll be all right. And don't worry about literature. And don't worry about work steps. Because the first year is a gift. But wait a minute. Ask yourself this question. When you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor what your symptoms are, that you're coughing and you're wheezing and you can't breathe, and when you go up the stairs you have a hard time breathing, like when you go and you tell the doctor that your back hurts because you think you might have a cold in your lungs, and when the doctor gives you the antidote to your ailment, does he tell you to wait a year before you start taking the antidote? Or does he tell you to take your now behind to the pharmacist, get the script filled, and start getting better right now? So why would I not want to endeavor into step work day one? I know it's a pace, not a race. No, it's a race for my life. My life is on the line. My experience spells out that if I don't do something to change who and what I am and how I feel about myself, that I will return to active drug addiction. The same person that got here will use. When nothing changes, your clean date changes. So I'm not going to talk about my conviction with Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just going to let you know that I will not defend my right to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. So we're going to move right along. I want to tell you about April 15th, 1992. Stay with me if you will. April 15th, 1992. I'm in Wecraig Towers in Newark, New Jersey. I'm smoking crack like a fiend. I'm looking out the window. I'm watching the door. I'm counting my money every 3 minutes. I do a hit. I run to the bathroom. I count what I got. I count my money. I come back out. I do another hit. I do the same thing. And that goes on. I had been doing that for about 3.5 weeks at the time. And that goes on for another 15 days. And on April 30th of 1992, I was on the 7th floor in Weequahic Towers in Newark, New Jersey, and I did a hit. And I went in the bathroom and I counted what I had and I counted how much money I had, and I came out and we were on the 7th floor and I looked out the window and I told everybody, shh, they're coming. And everybody in the crack spot said, sit down and shut up. And when I sat down, I watched the doorknob for, which was probably about 30 seconds, but it seemed like an eternity. And I went, shh, the doorknob's moving. And the girl running the crack spot said, yo, listen, brother, you got to go. Your tweaking behind is messing up our get high. I said, oh, time out, I got a clip. And I got $300 in cash. She said, that's a tired old story. And it don't matter to us anymore. We can get drugs someplace else. You have got to go. When you get thrown out of the crack spot, and you got crack in your pocket, and you got money in your other pocket, it might be time to address your using. And on May 1st, 1992, I celebrated my first day clean and haven't had the need to use since. And 16 days from today, I will celebrate 15 years clean. And that might not impress some of you jokers who have double digits, 25, 30 years clean, but for a junkie like me, who came to Narcotics Anonymous every day for 6 years and couldn't stop using for more than 2 weeks at any given time, I'm pretty impressed by God's grace. And I want to just tell you, I just want to go back to 1987. It was November or October of 1987. I went to detox and treatment for the first time, and I was in treatment. It was a Saturday night, and H&I came in. And H&I came in, and this brother came in, man. Now, you need to follow the story. This brother came in. He had a raccoon hat, a sheepskin coat, shell-top Adidas. He had the seam sewn in his Lee jeans. He dipped when he walked. I wasn't sure if he was Run or D from Run DMC. And this brother came up there every Saturday, and he had this bad white girl with him. Oh, my God. Now, I was engaged. Well, my wife was engaged. I don't know what I was. And all I heard this brother say for 4 weeks is, if you want what we got to do what we do. So, of course, I equated the badass girl with him. He must have did what he did, and that's how he got her. And I want me one of them. Now, I got me one of them at home, but I don't be liking her because she knows who I am, so I want me one of them. But I wasn't ready to stay clean. I wasn't ready to stop using. I wasn't ready to go to meetings and work steps and sponsorship. I wasn't ready to do none of that. The only thing I was ready to do was just have the absence of pain. So I continued to use and continued to use and continued to use. And on May 1st of 1992, when God graced me with my first day clean, I went into treatment a couple weeks later. And I had 37 days clean, and I was in treatment. I was in this halfway house, and I was getting ready for a furlough. And I had been stacking money for like a couple weeks now. You know, my wife, I was married now. In 89 we got married. I conned, manipulated, lied, stole, cheated, promised her I wouldn't use, smoked crack the night before we got married in front of a presence of God and cried the whole time through shame and guilt and all of those things that we do. But what had happened was I was stacking money and I had 37 days clean. And it was a Friday night and I went to this meeting in Mattawan, New Jersey. And I wanted to use. And I knew just about everybody in the meeting. I was friends with just about everybody in the meeting. And I knew them for the 6 years I had been coming in Narcotics Anonymous. And I wanted to get high. And I had a reservation. And I was sitting in the back of the room. And I had already made out the plan. I had already told my wife that I was going to go to the meeting in Edison on Saturday. And I knew I was going to leave. And I was going to go out and use. And I was going to do my thing. And what happened was God showed up. Because I'm in the room and I can't tell nobody I want to use because I'm ashamed that I want to use. Newcomer, it's okay to want to use. It's not okay to use, it's okay to come back. But it's not okay to use because this is not okay anonymous. So I'm sitting back there and I'm plotting and I'm planning and I got this whole story I'm going to make up and I'm going to tell my wife. And this brother raises his hand. He's like 8 people in front of me and he raises his hand and he says, I got 6 years clean. I'm a 12-step member. I got a relationship with God. I got a sponsor, but I'm in multiple relationships and I don't want to live like this anymore. And I'm coming to the most powerful vehicle to help me to get through to the other side. And I was like, oh my God. That brother's got 6 years clean and he's putting his stuff on the floor and I don't have enough courage to tell anybody in this room that I want to get high. And after the meeting, I went up to the front of the room where his brother was standing. And it was the same brother, right, that came to H&I 6 years earlier. And he had a sweatshirt on, regular Lee blue jeans, and a pair of Tim's. And he had a presence about him that was indescribable. And I remember I dropped my head and I looked at my feet and I said to him, I was wondering if maybe possibly if there was any way that you could possibly maybe, I was wondering if maybe, would you be able to possibly, I need a sponsor. And he took his hand. And he put it under my chin and he pulled my chin up and he said to me, I would be honored to have a man like you in my life. And that man was Andre F., the banquet speaker last night. And he sponsored me for 10.5 years. And I'll never be able to pay back to him or anybody that comes behind me what he did for me. And I love you, Andre. And about four and a half years ago, I had to change sponsors. It was just time. We had gotten to a spot where I was no longer willing to call. He had moved to Nashville. I was no longer willing to call. Some very promising, encouraging things were going on in his life. And he wasn't as available as I wanted him to be. And it was just time. God had already moved my heart earlier to move on. And we went through about 2 years where we didn't really speak. And 2 years ago, I went down to Nashville with a man that I was sponsoring down there for his anniversary. And I got to see Andre. And since then, God has saw fit to bring our relationship back. Because most people who have a relationship for 10 years in Narcotics Anonymous through sponsorship, when they part ways, it is not usually beneficial to either member. Because neither member usually has the ability to be loving, caring, and understanding and supportive of the other. But I'm here to tell you that God's power and God's grace will supersede any personal feelings that you may have with anybody in Narcotics Anonymous at any given time. And no matter what the hurt is, if you go to God and ask God to take the hurt away and allow you to be carried through your storm and allow God to raise you up and allow you to become the man or the woman that God created you to be from the very beginning, that He will restore relationships and make them greater than they were before. I want to talk about God's love and God's grace and God's mercy and what He's done for me in spite of my behavior, in spite of all the things that have gone on in my life, in spite of my inappropriate behavior and my arrogance and my indignance and my unwillingness to change. He has still loved me so much that He has afforded me time and time and time and time again to have an opportunity to recover from such a deadly disease like the disease of addiction. And life is a set of circles. And I really believe, I used to never believe that God would test you, but the only way God knows where He can use you is if He tests your character, if He tests your obedience, if He tests your commitment, if He tests what it is you say that you're going to do, if you're really going to do it, even when it's not going to be beneficial to you. Are you still going to be able to live in the grace and mercy? Are you able to still come to meetings and praise God even when your 17-year-old sister dies in a car accident? Jimmy, you talk about me when you buy the house, and you talk about me when you get the job, and you talk about me when you go over a step, and you talk about me when you do this. But can you talk about me now when I have taken something that you treasure, when I have removed something that you treasure, when life has happened and you have a loss in your life? Can you still come to meetings and still say, I want to thank God for everything? I'm just going to do a quick synopsis of what's transpired for 14 years in my life, and then we're going to talk about where we're at in the here and now. At 18 months clean, my wife gave birth to my oldest daughter, Ashley Marie. At 2 years old, 18 months old, we bought a house. I lost my job. I sold my truck. I bought a station wagon. The Brady Mobile, no less. All my friends used to mess with me. I had a thumping system. I had the beats bumping in the truck. And I sold all of that when my wife gave birth to my child in the best interest of my family. I lost my job 3 days after I bought my house. I packed my stuff up. I traveled to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I stayed out there long enough to be able to come back to New Jersey to be able to get a job at half of what I do for a living. But with the half pay, they afforded me the opportunity to work 60 and 70 hours a week so that I could keep my house and feed my family. See, sometimes the test is to see if you can meet the condition so that when He blesses you with the blessing, you can really stand to be blessed. See, the problem with us in the sixth step, it says, you know, we want the fruit without the labor. We want God to bless us, and we don't even know what to do with what we got. We can't manage what we got, but we want more. So what God does, sometimes He will purge you of the things that you have in order to get your attention, so that when He can get your attention, He can get you to become obedient to what it is He wants you to do, so that when He blesses you with what He really wanted you to have from the beginning, that you'll be able to handle it in a mature manner. You'll be able to be responsible for it. So I went to Albuquerque. I came home about 8 months later. I got a job, and I'm a union construction worker. I got a job with a company that would never hire me before. I went in on a 2-week call. It's 13 years later. I went in from working every day to running major million-dollar projects in the state of New Jersey and what I do for a living. At 2 years old, a little over 2 years old, my daughter was diagnosed with bronchial asthma. She was in the bubble for 14 days. Set of full circles. I went up to the hospital as much as I was ably willing to go, and I spent the rest of my time running to meetings to be comforted for my fears. In hindsight, I did what I did, but in hindsight, where I should have been was with my wife and my daughter at the hospital, comforting them. Because I was proclaiming to have a relationship with God back then, but it was really just lip service. I was talking about I got a relationship with God, but when it came to get with God, I ran to meetings so that I could be comforted, so I wouldn't have to feel my feelings, and you could tell me it was going to be all right, and you would hold me and you would hug me. In the meantime, my wife had to suffer through the problems by herself. And I convinced my wife in 1998 to get pregnant again. I did my first meeting, my first main meeting in Narcotics Anonymous in 1998. I was the closing speaker at the Northern New Jersey Regional Convention. God must have been able to use me in a way that was beneficial to others. And what happened was they started asking me to go places. They started asking me to share at conventions and do main meetings, and they invited me to Rhode Island to be the banquet speaker at their second annual convention. And the weekend of the convention was June 12, 1999, and my daughter was due that weekend. And I remember I called Andre, and I said to Andre, I said, you know, they invited me to do the banquet, but Lori's due that weekend. He said, well, son, you really probably shouldn't go. And, you know, I didn't say much to him. I hung up the phone and I said, he's just jealous. He's only jealous because they didn't ask him. You know, he's got 6 years more than me. He's got like 11 years clean. They didn't ask him. They asked me. He's just jealous. It's not spiritual in nature why he's telling me I shouldn't go when my wife's going to give birth to my child. And at about 8 months clean, 8 months pregnant, my wife fell in the backyard. They lost a heartbeat. And I'm not proud of this, but for a moment there, I was kind of okay with that. Because, you know, I had been clean now, you know, like 6 years. And some of the things I wanted to do in life, like speak, I wanted to help others in such a way. And it was so important to me that I was being asked to speak. And you know, now this new baby was interfering with my opportunity to speak. Because if I had another child, then I wouldn't be able to go places and speak because I'd have to be responsible. And, you know, I was finally getting a life and I really wanted to be able to live my life. And they were interfering with it. So there was a moment there that I'm not proud of, that I was okay with the fact that they lost a heartbeat. And Haley Amanda was born on June 9th, 1999. And she was born with an incurable blood virus. On July 3rd, we rushed her to the hospital with 106 fever. They did a spinal tap on a three-week-old little baby. They had hoses coming out of every orifice of her body. The doctor came in and told us to go get our pastor, our chaplain, or whatever we did for our faith-based stuff, to go get them, to bring them in to give her last rites, because she was not going to make it. And I remember holding this little girl in my arm, and holding my wife's hand, and holding my other daughter's hand, and saying to the doctor, but you're not God. We've already committed her to God. Just do your job, please. Just do your job, please. And I was working 14-hour days at the time, and I would go home and I would shower, and I would go right to the hospital. And I would not leave that hospital until 6 o'clock in the morning to go back to work. And I was not sleeping, and I didn't sleep for like 13 days. And it didn't kill me. I didn't get hurt on the job. I wasn't inappropriate. Every time I went to that hospital, I held that little girl in my arm and I sang to her, sunshine, my only sunshine, please don't take my sunshine away. And I'm here to tell you that on June 9th of 2007, she will be 8 years old. See, because when you put your faith in God and stop putting your faith in people, miracles happen. See, it's not the fellowship that lets us down. It's the fellows that are in the ship that let us down. The program is infallible. There are no hiccups in the program. There's a lot of hiccups in our fellowship. There's no hiccups in our program. In 2001, my wife was diagnosed with cervical cancer. We went through five major surgeries. They did a full hysterectomy. Everything that they took out of my wife's insides were 99.9% cancerous. I sat at the hospital. Every surgery she had, I held her hand. We prayed together and we kept it moving. In 2002, we got a call from the pediatrician. He said that Ashley Marie's asthma had healed to a point of comfort. He said that Haley Amanda's blood virus was non-existent, like it was never there. The doctor called, the gynecologist called and said that there is no trace of cancer in my wife anywhere. We hit our knees, we went to meetings, we thanked God, we thanked our sponsor, we thanked the men we sponsor, and we kept it moving. 2002, I come home from work and my house is barren. It's June 3rd, 2002. My house is barren. My house is never barren. There's always something going on in my house. And I come in the house and my wife says to me, "You need to sit down." I said, "Okay, shoot." I said, "I'm trying to look at something." She says, "No, you need to sit down." She says, "Your mom had a bad car accident." So is she okay? Yeah, she's all right. She's a little banged up. I said, "Oh, thank you, God." She says, "However." She says, "Robin was in the truck with your mom. And she didn't make it." Robin was 17 years old. Robin was my father's nephew's daughter that my parents adopted. We've had that little girl since the time she was 3 months old. She was born addicted to heroin, barbiturates, cocaine, PCP, and alcohol. She was yellow until she was 18 months old. She couldn't eat. She couldn't sleep. She couldn't go to the bathroom. She couldn't read. She couldn't write. She was a little bit mentally slow. Through the love of my family, we raised that little girl to graduate from high school with a 3.8 grade average. My parents, my mother took her to San Diego. My parents moved to Arizona. My mother took her to San Diego to register for San Diego State. And on the way back, my mother lost control of the van. The van flipped. When my mother came to, all she could see was her baby from the chest up underneath the truck. We fly to Vegas, my wife and I. We drive the 2 hours into Arizona where my parents live. And you know, denial is the first thing that happens when something goes on in your life that you don't want to accept. And I went in the house and I went in her room and she wasn't there. And I went in the living room and she wasn't there. And I went out in the backyard by the pool and she wasn't there. And I just looked up into the blue sky and just asked God to keep me strong enough to be strong enough, just to be strong enough. And my father came out. My father was a cop all of his life, and feelings and emotions outside of rage and anger were not something he showed. He was a violent, violent man. He broke my nose twice. He knocked my teeth out. I mean, he was a violent man. He didn't know about love. And he came out and he looked at me and he says to me, "Hey, are you going to be all right?" And I said to him, "Are you going to be all right?" And he came across the pool deck and he hugged me and he started to sob. And he started to tell me. He started to tell me that now that I was there, that he knew that no matter what happened, that it was going to be all right. And that he needed me to be there to hold him. And that he hoped that someday when he grew up that he'd become half the man that I had become. And that man had never told me in all of my life that he loved me. And he told me how important I was. And that if he could just be half the father that I am, that he would be half a man. And we buried my sister. And we kept it moving. And we come home and my wife is diagnosed with congestive heart failure. So we go to the doctor and the doctor says, "Hey, listen, here's what we got to do, Mr. Trowbridge. We need to reduce the stress in your wife's life."
I said, okay. In my head, I'm saying, she's got to deal with me and two kids. This just isn't going to work. So I call my sponsor, and I don't ask my sponsor. I tell my sponsor that I've prayed on this and that I've made a conscious commitment that I'm not going to any meetings other than my home group until further notice. That I was going to stay home and take care of my wife. And I did that for like 11 months. And I got my back kicked in. I was holier than thou. Half the men I was sponsoring were told that they needed to get a new sponsor because I wasn't going to meetings anymore. You got to watch what you share with folks. I was doing what the seventh step said. The seventh step says we return to the mainstream of life. My wife supported me all of her life. How dare I not support her in her time of need? You know, you really got to be mindful what you say to and around folks when you don't know them. You think you know them, but you don't really know them. You don't even know your own spouse. You don't even know your own kids. You really have no idea what your kids are capable of. You want to believe deep down inside that your kids won't do that. And no, my kid wouldn't do that. And yeah, that's really what you taught your kid, not to do that. But when life shows up, they may make the wrong choices. And it's got nothing to do with you. It's no reflection on you. It's just a conscious decision that they've made. Anybody is capable of anything at any given moment. And after 11 months, the congestive heart failure was gone. And in 2005, I come home on April 15th. And my wife says, I need to talk to you. I'm like, what's up? She says, I just got off the phone with your father. I said, okay, is grandma okay? She says, grandma's good, but Kathy passed away yesterday. Now, Kathy was my other sister. She was 37 years old. She suffered with this disease, and it took her life. And it took her life. We got her to Narcotics Anonymous. She just didn't want to stay clean. So we went back to Arizona. And we're sitting in the forest, my father and I, and he starts to cry and he says to me, I need you to make me a promise. And I'm not going to have to go through this with you. Can you please promise me that you're not going to use and I'm not going to have to bury you? And I made my father a promise that I wasn't going to use and he wouldn't have to bury me. And you might think that's arrogant or indignant, but I made a commitment to my relationship with God that no matter what, I wasn't getting high. There's a reoccurring theme in everything that I shared, and I don't know if it went over everybody's head, but I never used. Most non-addicts would have had to at least have a drink to cope. But when you got a relationship with God, a real relationship, not a lip service, not a I pray to God when I want to pray to God, no, a commitment, a relationship, a personal relationship. Not I go to church, not I read this book, not I read that book, not I do this, but a relationship. A relationship where you can feel God on the inside, where the warm feeling on the inside lets you know that no matter how treacherous the storm might be at any given moment, that He has got you, that you are out of the harm's way, that He has you lifted up in a spot that absolutely nothing can harm you, that nothing can get in your way, that no human being can do anything that He will not protect you from. When you get that relationship, you never, ever, never, never, never have to worry or use again. And I know as much as everybody stood up, there's that many people saying, oh, he's preaching at us. Don't.
We can't talk about God in meetings.
Can't. Nancy, don't talk about God. We might scare the newcomer. I got a newsflash. They'll be back. We start every meeting with God. We end every meeting with God. We talk about God throughout the whole meeting. But yet you want to tell a newcomer that it's not about getting a relationship with God. Come on now. Writing on the steps will not make you change. What it will do is it will make you aware of how sick you really are. The sole purpose of working the 12 steps is so you can identify how sick you really are, so that you will call upon the only power that can relieve you of how sick you really are. It's not your sponsor. Your sponsor could shoot dope. Your sponsor might not answer the phone. God is always on call. But I want to share for a couple minutes. Because I'll keep everybody here till like 3 o'clock. You don't know. I want to talk about the importance of allowing yourself to feel. A couple years ago, I went through I didn't know what it was at the time. We had buried sisters and my wife had been sick and my kids had been sick and I didn't use, and I was making meetings, and I was praying, and I was doing all the things that I needed to do, and I went into this depression that I didn't know I was in, and sexually I couldn't be aroused, and I had no ability to have an erection, and I couldn't make love to my wife, and we went to the doctor, and the doctor says to me, he says, little Oriental guy, and I'm not trying to make fun of nobody, but when I think back, it was funny. Oh, my God. He says, James? I said, yes. He said, you're 38. You no do penis problem. I said, hey, doc, I do penis problem. He said, hey, James, you got anything going on in your life? I said, well, no. Thank God for my wife. And I remember Thomas P. talking about going to the dentist and his wife having to tell him to breathe so he didn't pass out in the chair. And I flashed back to this on that day. He says, you got problems in your life? I said, no, I got no problems. 12-step member. You better recognize I'm Jimmy T. I'm not saying this to him, but this is what I'm thinking. So my wife, in her infinite wisdom, nosy body self, she says, you got no problems. Let's see. We just buried Robin. We buried Kathy. I suffered with cancer. We haven't had sex in almost 2.5 years. Didn't your job just tell you you're probably going to be laid off at the end of the week, so we're not going to be able to pay the mortgage at the end of the month? Yeah, you're right. You ain't got no problems. So the doctor says, oh, James, you do depression. Now, here's where I told him who I was. I said, no, you know, I don't do depression. I'm a 12-step member. I speak all over the country. I got a relationship with God. I don't do depression. Oh, James, you do depression. So I call my sponsor. I call Richie. I'm like, hey, Rich. He said, I'm doing depression. I said, I can't do depression. He said, that's right. You're Jimmy T. said, I'm all over the country helping folks. How could I be in depression? And what happened was I fell into this trap with like 13 years clean, where I thought that if I just talked about it, that it would be okay. If I just wrote about it, it would go away. If I just prayed about it, it would be okay. But what happened was every time it would come up, I would make myself busy in some other area so as not to deal with the grief and the loss that was going on in my life. You know how we get here? And I'm telling my story now. If you could identify, get on in. You know how you get here in early recovery and you get involved with everything? And then you have service-based recovery? And then you realize a couple years down the line you're crazy as Cocoa Puffs? You carry a clear, strong Narcotics Anonymous message, but you're crazier than a bag of dope. So that's what I started doing. I started getting involved with all kinds of things, and I found myself not doing sponsorship. I found myself not writing on steps. I found myself being irresponsible in Narcotics Anonymous, and I found myself just like kind of just coasting, resting on my laurels. And about 8 months ago, I hit a wall. And I hit this wall where I had become, I'm going to share this. You know, I had asked this man to sponsor me. And every time this man said something to me, I wouldn't say nothing to him other than, okay. And I would hang up and say, Andre would have never told me to do that. Nah. Andre would have never said that. Andre would have never did that. Nah. So I was discounting my sponsor's direction because I was holding on to some old stuff that had already stopped working for me. But because I had a resistance to change and because I was resting on some speaker tapes that God blessed me to have, I was resting on people calling me from all over the country, telling me what a wonderful job I was doing and how I changed their lives. I had become so consumed in helping everybody else change their life that I had forgot about myself. I had forgotten where in the first step it talks about dereliction and dereliction in the dictionary. I heard some people this weekend say, well, I don't do the dictionary because I don't need to be smart. Well, I don't need to be smart neither. I just need to know what the word means. Dereliction means self-abandonment. So here I am with 13 years clean, traveling around the country, sharing my behind off, people going, ooh, oh, ooh, oh, you saved my life, you the man, I hope my husband gets his tape, ba 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 ba. In the meantime, y'all were getting better and I was getting sicker. So about 8 months ago, I made a commitment to sponsorship again and started doing step work, and I've been writing like a dog, and I've been doing sponsorship, and I've been talking to my sponsor 2-3 times a week. We went over some step work a while back. He gave me 6 suggestions. I said, I'm not doing any of them. That was a Sunday. By Friday, 5 of them were done. Because I was still in rebellion, but my spirit. What happens is, When God gets in you, you cannot get God out of you no matter what you do. No matter how bad you act. No matter how inappropriate you may be. No matter how devious, slimy, low down, grimy you might be. No matter what it is you do. Once the Spirit has entranced in your body, you cannot get it out. What happens is we just do deviant things to ourselves to dampen the Spirit of God. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. We start doing things to make us feel bad enough about ourselves that we don't feel worthy enough to go back to God to ask for relief from what it is He gave us relief the first time, because it says in our literature that our character defects are arrested. And I got a newsflash. You know who's on the lead of the parole board? Me. When my defects are ready to come out, I have a conscious decision to make. Yeah, I can deal with you right now. Yeah, you're released. Go cause some havoc, and when you get caught up, I'll bring you and arrest you again. You got to follow me now. You got to follow what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like how you will do things until the pain gets great enough. And what's been happening for me is I'm in a repositioning. I'm trying to reposition myself. I was listening to Thomas yesterday. And listen, nobody's more important than anybody else, but I was listening to Thomas yesterday share in the workshop that he did, and I have always admired Thomas and always wanted to be around Thomas, and the fact that he showed up with his wife and his daughter this morning and his friends, trust me. It meant everything in the world to me. And I was listening to Thomas yesterday talk about how he took a situation in his life and he's going to enhance the message that God has graced him to share. And I shared in Finger Lakes, and Andre was the banquet speaker, and I shared in Finger Lakes, and that's exactly what Andre said to me. He said, man, the message is going to change now, Jimmy. It's going to take it to another level. What's going to be shared out of your mouth, not only is it going to be experience, but it's going to be able to help the addict with substantial clean time who's still stuck in a rut. I don't believe for a minute that what comes out of my mouth is not newcomer friendly, but I believe what happens is we get here and we stay here for a while and we start thinking that we don't need to do any more work because, you know, we've arrived at a point of comfort. But the comfort, see, what I'm understanding clearly is that it's not about a point of comfort for me. It's about a point of comfort for my wife and my daughters. A lot of silence now. I'm talking about having some peace in my household. I'm talking about when I go to drive away from my driveway that my wife and daughters aren't saying, oh, thank God he's going to another convention. They're saying, are you going to be back early enough on Sunday so we can do our thing? My daughters dance competitively all over, and they're dancing this weekend. And the only reason I was able and capable to take this commitment, and I'm just going to tell you straight out, is because my relationship with Andre has always been so strong, and he became a part of my family. And when Nisi called me and said, will you come? And I was talking to Andre, and he was like, they invited me to do Saturday night. And, you know, so I played my Andre card. I said to my wife, hey, babe, you know, Dre's doing the banquet. They want me to do Sunday morning. You know, that would be an honor. It's, you know, what do you think? And she says, well, you got to talk to the girls because, you know, the girls are the ones that want you at the dance competitions. And my oldest daughter, who loves and adores Andre, said, hey, Daddy, anything for Andre. And I've become involved. And if I offend anybody, please forgive me. But I've become involved in my daughter's dance school. I'm a MOD. That's a man of dance. You know, I don't really dance. I dance in the classroom with the kids, but you know, that's just me being me. But I've endeavored into a practice of faith in my life that has enhanced my life And before you even start with the, oh, here we go, if you read it in our 11th step, in the step working guide, the flat book, the green and gold big book, it says that at some point you're going to be required to go outside the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous to get your spiritual needs met, because we do not address all your spiritual needs right here in Narcotics Anonymous, because in the spirit of unity and cooperation, we can't talk about a specific God, and you may at some point need a specific God in your life, and you might have to go out of Narcotics Anonymous and find it. Now, don't bring that God back in here, but what we want you to do is come back here and share the good news, how the 12 steps have gotten you to a point where you can allow God to get into your life on a different level, where you can allow God to do things in your life that you've always wanted to do, that you've always wanted to transpire in your life, that you've always wanted to be a truly, truly man or woman of God. You always wanted to be a better person, and you always wanted to be loving and caring, and you always wanted to be able to hug that person in the home group that you really don't like. You know, that addict that comes in the group that looks just like you and talks just like you and acts just like you and has the same character defects of you. You know, the one you don't like because when you look at them, you see the mirror. So I've endeavored into this and I've bought into it. And it's been for years now that I've been doing it. And what happened is it's changed not only my relationships in Narcotics Anonymous, it's not only changed the message that God is bringing about through my life, it's changed my relationships with everybody in my life. When I first went to this dance school, all of the little kids, the 7, the 8, the 10-year-olds, they loved me. I'm the hip-hop dad. You know, look. Yeah, I'm in a knit suit, but this is me. You know, Andre was saying last night, yeah, you know, we were told to get dressed up when we do main meetings, and blah, 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 blah. So I put the dress up on, right? I really wanted to rock my turtleneck with my hat backwards, with my jeans, with my white Timbs, and that's really what I wanted to rock this morning, but I was like, you know, I'm gonna follow direction from the most glorious Dot T when she shared with us the things that we needed to do and all of those other things and all of our predecessors and Carmelita and Bob B and Chuck and all the guys out in California and all around the United States who made what we have today possible for us. I listened to them. I followed direction from them. I love and respect them. So I came like dressed up, but I'm the hip-hop dad. But what's happened the last year and a half is all of a sudden it's the teenage girls, the juniors and the seniors, they've been attracted to my spirit. And there's a young lady at the dance school who really hasn't talked to her dad in 2 years, and every time she sees me, she gives me a big hug. And when she's struggling with something, she calls me and she's like, "Hey, Mr. Jimmy, what do you think?" And I'm like, "I don't know, Shauna, what do you think?" She's like, "Well, I don't know. What do you think?" I'm like, "What did daddy say?" She said, "I don't want to talk to him." I said, "Baby, you need to talk to your daddy. Your daddy loves you. He's there for you." But whatever it is that she sees in me, she trusts me. These kids come to me and they come off the stage and they don't want to talk to their parents. And you know, all teenagers are the same. Everybody else's parents are cooler than their parents. And the grass is always greener on the other side till you get over there and it's full of weeds and all of that stuff. But these girls have become attracted to the spirit that God has saw fit to bring out of me. And what's happening for me is I'm starting to see that although Narcotics Anonymous is an intricate part of my life, it is not my life. And I heard some people over the weekend say, well, I got a life. And then they were dogging people that say that. But the literature, the 12 steps are built for us to gain coping mechanisms to be able to deal with everyday living, not to come hide in meetings, not to be at 15 years clean. If I'm in 7 meetings a week, I probably haven't addressed my first step yet. I got a wife and daughter at home. Daughters at home. If you read the Just for Today, it says true service work starts at home. Are you running to meetings every day? Is your family, did the people in your life go from the people that helped you to those people? Oh, a lot of silence. Those people. How many people have been told, "Oh, you're going with those people again"? You know, the same people your husbands, wives, and parents were saying, "Thank God for those people. Oh, God, I'm so grateful for those." Now you've become those people. You're always with those people. You're always hanging out with those people. That's not what this is designed to do. This is designed for us to enhance the quality of our lives so that we can get out and really live life on life's terms. I make meetings regularly, 2 meetings a week. I have service commitments. I have a home group, Read and Recover, Northeast area. We meet Tuesday nights, 4th and Walnut, Purpose of Recovery from the Disease of Addiction. It's a basic text meeting. But because we're open to the process of recovery, it's not just a basic text meeting. We have a beginner's meeting in the back for those of the people who come there who are not yet open to the literature and just need some place to go to feel welcomed. I make 1 other meeting a week. Sometimes I make 2. I'm home. I'm with my wife and my daughters. I'm involved with the dance school. I do the things that you told me I was supposed to be doing when I got here. I'm not supposed to be in meetings every night. I'm supposed to be available and visible. I'm supposed to continue to sponsor men. I sponsor men. That's all I sponsor. That's where I'm comfortable. That's what I do. I don't care what anybody in Narcotics Anonymous does. I don't care what anybody in Narcotics Anonymous says. I'm comfortable with sponsoring men. I'm not comfortable with anything other than what's going on in my life in the current phase right now. But I'm also in a spot in my life where I do not turn anybody away when they need help. This is a fellowship of men and women. I just don't go over step work and become intimate with women. Because although I will be married 18 years, May 27th, and on March 2nd, we celebrated 26 years together, and I've never been with any other woman, even in the 3 years that my wife could not have sex, I never went outside my relationship. And I didn't not cheat on my wife. And I didn't not cheat on me. I didn't cheat on God. I stood before God. I said to God that through better or worse, I will stand by her side. I don't come here to brag about that stuff. I come here to tell you that it's possible. Not all men are dogs. I heard a friend of mine the other night apologize for all men. I took offense to that. I don't mistreat women. I don't do those things. I don't call them B's and C's and all of those things. I don't go to go-go bars. I don't treat women like they're less than me. I treat women as my equal. I understand clearly that God created women to be able to lift men up so that men can be able to lift them up so that we can get to the same spot. If you're not treating your people in your life like kings and queens, somebody else will, and you will lose them. I'm going to share this and I'm going to shut up. 2 weeks ago, my daughter's 13. She's graduating 8th grade. And my other daughter's got some stuff going on. We had to go dress shopping. Now, you got to hear me now. I got two little girls that I adore. And my wife does all of that. All the dress shopping. And 2 weeks ago, my wife said to me, "Hey, babe, you know, what are you doing Saturday? Are you going to go to a meeting or something? We got to go dress shopping." I said, no, babe, I want to go with you. She said, "Excuse me?" I said, "Yeah, I want to go." So my oldest daughter was like, "That's cool, Daddy, that's cool." Because she's going to put me in a granny dress. "You're cool, Daddy, you'll do the right thing." And we went and we picked out this dress, these two dresses for my youngest daughter, And they kind of like, they didn't even want my wife's input because they were so happy that I was there with them. And we were in the store and my little one was like, "I like these shoes, Daddy." "Ooh, I really like them." "And I like these shoes, Daddy." "Ooh, and I really like them." And my typical MO would be, "Just pick a pair of shoes already. They're all white." But I wasn't. I was like, "Well, let's put them on." My wife's looking at me like I got two heads. She's like, "Let's put them on. Let's see what they look like. How do they feel? You feel like a diva?" She's got her hips going, her head going. She'll be 8, right? She's like, "Yeah, I do." I said, "Let's get them." And then we went to JCPenney's to get my oldest daughter a couple dresses. And my oldest daughter is 13. She'll be 14 in September, and she looks like she's 17. Patow, patow. I've been sharing from the podium that I love women with big butts and big chests. So God granted my wish. First he gave me my wife who has those things, and now he's given me one daughter so far with those things. So we go in and she picks these two dresses, and she's like a Marilyn Monroe freak, and she picks these two dresses and she comes out of the dressing room with these two dresses on with like badow. And I'm like, "Okay. You like that one, baby?" And she looks at me and she says, "Only if you do." So we bought the dress because that's what she wanted. She's a straight-A student. She's a respectful kid. She prays for people. We just talked to her this morning. I talked to her. She was dancing this morning at 8:30. And I says to her, "You good, baby? You all right?" She goes, "Yeah." I go, "Did you stretch out?" She said, "Yeah, Daddy." I said, "Okay, did you?" She says, "Yes, I just finished praying before you called." The family that prays together stays together. F- from that weekend a couple weeks ago, my wife and I don't think have ever been closer, because what's starting to happen is not only are the people around me starting to see it, but the people immediately in my life are starting to see the change. And my wife is starting to see that I've completely committed my life to my relationship with God, myself, and then to my wife and my daughters, and then NA comes in there. And that might not sound appropriate to you, but I've spent the last 15 years putting NA in front of my wife and kids. And I'm no longer in a position where I need to do that. What I need to do is I need to find a balance. My wife and kids need to have a spot. NA needs to have a spot. Both of those spots need to be after my relationship with God and myself. So those are where I'm at in my life. And I want to tell you something. We pray before we eat. We pray before we leave the house. My daughters in the morning pray before they go to school. They just ask God to help them to be leaders and not followers. They just ask God to help them to be the best kids that they can be, that they will be obedient. They pray that they have traveling grace to and from school. And if there's anything I can leave you with, is that you need to learn how to pray with the people that are in your life. We prayed yesterday at the breakfast table, and then again this morning, and we just did us. I used to be so self-conscious. We'd be praying. I have my eyes open to see who was watching. I don't care anymore. I just don't care. I'm not here to please nobody. I didn't come here this morning to make nobody's day. I didn't come here to offend nobody. I just came here to do what God said for me to do. I hope that at some point during God sharing this morning through me, that you got that warm feeling inside. And if you got that warm, googly, uncomfortable, like the spirit moving inside of you, like your blood was just gurgling, feeling at any time during this morning while the meeting was going on, just remember that if you make a conscious decision to clap when I'm done sharing, that the clap will not be for Jimmy T, but the clap will be for God, that you made a conscious decision to invite into the meeting, because without God, none of this would have ever been possible. And if nobody told you that they love you today, you need to get some new people in your life. But I want you to know from the bottom of my heart, that I love everybody that's here today. Thank you for letting me share.